Welcome to ICA Podcast 9. The goal of ICA Podcast 9 is to provide insightful information about the industry to members and non-members of Intercoiffure America Canada, the voice for salon owners. Each week, we'll bring business, educational, and inspirational topics to aid anyone with ties to the beauty industry. We will have a revolving series of hosts, pulling from industry leaders as hosts and guests to keep things lively and interesting, and make you wonder what's coming next. Now, here's this week's edition of ICA Podcast 9.
Good morning to everyone. My name is Sheila Wilson. I'm the president of Intercoiffure America Canada. And today we are going to be speaking with Lois Christie, who has been a member of Intercoiffure for many years, a great salon owner, a leader in her community and in the industry, as well as the first female president of Intercoiffure America Canada. So welcome, Lois.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Sheila. It's a pleasure to be here.
I know this is a long time coming. I'm so excited that you're going to be on our podcast. And I would like for everybody to know just a little bit about you. So, you know, tell us about how you got into the industry and just, you know, everything that's happened to you to bring you up to this point. And then we'll talk about current issues and also future things that you see that you think that's going to be happening or that we need to be aware of. So let's talk about where you started.
Well, I opened the first salon in 1970 and in New York, in Bayside, New York. And it's been quite a journey. And it's 52 years later. And we've grown, of course, exponentially. At one point, we had three salons. I was thinking of multiple at that time. That's what everybody was doing, you know, multiples. Then I decided to do one large location, which we're in today, in a AAA mall, which I'll talk about later, because I think your location and your leases are something you have to address first. When we all went in business many years ago, we just loved the beauty industry and we wanted to open salons and, you know, and now you have so many more factors to take into account. One of the best things that happened to my career, I'm sure you'll agree, Sheila, in 1992, I was accepted into Intercoiffure America Canada. And at the time, I really wasn't sure what Intercoiffure was. I believe it's a great part of the success and the continued success of Christie & Company today to be affiliated with the best organizations. Intercoiffure worldwide, of course, is the only organization for owners that you could go to, whether you're small or large, and learn from each other and share from each other. And I think that's invaluable to all of us, even more important today, I believe. I was voted the first female vice president of Intercoiffure. I served for 3 years, and I served for 3 years as America Canada's president, 8 years. And then I was 3 years world vice president. So I have quite an extensive resume of Intercoiffure. And it's been a great journey, and I encourage everyone to bring in new members and share how great this organization is. And I think it's like all organizations, we've had bumps and you know, rough spots, but at the end, the members bring it through, and we have to hold on to it because it's the only organization in the world, I believe, for salon owners and private entrepreneurs. So I think that's very important. I always wanted to be a hairdresser, so not much of that story, Sheila. Since I was little, I was lucky enough to have all my own personal goals come true. And we're continuing to move forward. We've done some new changes now for the future.
So you have one large salon right now.
Yes.
Do you see everybody beginning to downsize a little bit from the mini salon?
Yeah. So I think I know friends of mine, they were former members, even Visible Changes, the McCormicks have downsized, I think from 17 salons to 12. I'm downsizing. So whether you have multiple or whether you have one location, we're in the process now of downsizing from 8,000 square feet down to about 5,800 square feet. And the reason is, you know, you really have to analyze what's changed for us in business and really own it and accept it. You know, retail has changed for us. Spa services has changed, things like that. And analyzes that square footage really bringing in the revenue you need to run your business and make it profitable? Or is the square footage, like maybe years ago when we first started to build, everybody wanted bigger and better. And we were, you know, we were day spas, we were nail, we were everything. And I think now it's more of a personalized boutique type of service. And that's what we're doing.
I think the pandemic brought that out a little bit quicker. I think it was headed that way anyway. Don't you agree?
I do agree.
That sort of expedited the desire for everybody to have that one personal service, not being involved in one business with 500 people standing around them, but more that one-on-one specialized service. So tell me how you... what you've changed since the pandemic that maybe you hadn't expected to change, and then tell me what you were planning to change and you continued to change after the pandemic. How did all of that affect you?
Sure. Well, as you know, New York was shut down probably the longest, and it was really a tough time to get through, but I kind of used it. It was just our 50th anniversary when they shut us down, and we had all these plans for celebrations and so forth, and I sat back and I said, how are we getting the staff through it? What could it possibly look like when we all reopen? Which none of us knew. It was a scary time. But I also knew right before the pandemic that I wanted to scale down and really look at what services, not only were they profitable, that I really enjoyed doing and my staff enjoyed doing, and what are the other services we have that we have them because they're necessary, but do I really want to do it? And how difficult will it be going forward to keep that kind of staff? One would be, we have a large nail salon, which I really, it is a separate business, treated as that. Spa business, do we really want it? How much has the internet affected our retail business? Are we going to get it back to our 19 numbers? Which we did, by the way. We've surpassed our 19 numbers. But just this year in 2021, 2020, of course, was a washout. And 2021, we were okay. 2022, we'll surpass our 19 numbers. So that was a long 3 years. What do I see? What I've learned? I think we have to get the staff on more fast track training, which we've changed. And we can get a colorist, for example, on the floor, and most employees within 3 months' time, so that they feel they're working on hair and making some money, and they're not like we used to have these programs where it was like maybe 3 years for a colorist, you know. So I think that's over. I think the people who were maybe booth rentals or independents and that type of thing realize the importance of a team and a salary-based salon, that when things go wrong, you know, all my store staff received pay during that. So I think they were looking for kind of more of a home. There'll always be a certain amount of people that prefer independent, but that's a different business than what we offer, Sheila, is Intercoiffure Salons, as you know, where we're salary commission-based, we're education-based. And more importantly, I think we're a family and a team of owners and employees that enjoy being with each other. We don't do well, most hairdressers, in a little cubbyhole by ourselves. We learn from each other, we motivate each other. So I think maybe smaller teams, but I think a lot of the independents, that's what I'm seeing in New York personally, that a lot of these independents, especially from Manhattan, really like the idea of a team and coming to work in a beautiful salon with everything done for them. They just have to walk in and be part of that team.
Have you changed your hours? Are you a little bit more flexible? How's that working for you?
Yeah, we always have flex hours because we're open 7 days, but we've actually shortened the hours of business. So for example, we were open from 9 to 9 on a Friday, Thursday, Friday, like that. We're now till 8 o'clock. So we've shortened off the week about 5 hours. We're open 10 to 7. We're in a major mall, so there's certain restrictions. But just the pace of what clients are coming now, they're not coming so late as they were. We're open 7 days, which is valuable to us. Sunday is our third busiest day, and it's Working Women Day. I think what I've seen is different days, different clientele, that's their important day. Sunday for us in New York, the working women love Sunday more than Saturday. So I kind of gauge the staff. What staff am I having in that day? Is it my younger staff, my trainees, my senior people? You know, we do that according, we try, and it's worked out well.
So how you mentioned the internet sales. How did that impact you? And how did you get back to having the strong numbers this year equal to 19 the internet has affected you?
Yeah, well, the internet, as we all know, every product is there. Our clients will buy our products from us when they're in the salon. Do they do the refills or the rebuys from us? Not always. Can you compete? I believe in strategic arrangements with each manufacturer you do business with, and we are in the luxury brands, that strategic planning, both on the part of the manufacturers we buy from and us, to help support any internet sales. As you know, I'm sure there are many deals with most of the companies to give you credits back that come from your zip code. But I want more than that. I want the same samples and gift with purchases that they would give a Sephora or a Neiman Marcus or something. So when I say strategic meshes, planning with partners, it's very important. You just have to ask for it. I think that's important. So we increased our hair color sales, Shayla. That's where the big numbers came from, to be honest.
The hair color. Have you seen what price increase did you put in, or did you put a service fee, and have you kept that service fee?
Well, we always have a service fee for our products from the colorist. We always take a flat 10% off every ticket for products from the colorist themselves. I tried not to increase the prices when we first opened, but given that everything, I'm sure everybody can agree, has gone up from paper towels to gloves to, you know, whatever, we increased a 10% increase in our service, which we took the increase for the salon and not the employee, because we needed it. It goes right to your bottom line, and we wanted to hire more people. We wanted to be able to, you need to have a cash flow to be able to stay solvent, because especially last year, at any given time in 2021, especially, we didn't know when they were going to close us or open us or, you know, what was happening. I gave it back. At the end of the year, we were able to give back bonuses based on the extra 10%. So it was an insurance policy for the salon to have liquidity. And then we gave it back to the employees at the end of the year if we reached our goals, and we did. So that was the color. I think when we were all closed down, everybody appreciated their hairdressers and colorists. We are departmentalized. So I had a big picture of a Crayola crayon box in my windows, and I have large windows, 75 feet. And it said, the only hair color you should be home is this. And it was a Crayola box of crayons. And I said, if you want a box of crayons, I'll come out to the curb and give it to you, because we did not believe in giving hair color out at home. Perfect. And I think that, you know what happened, Sheila, when we reopened, at the time, everybody was nervous, even my staff, but what about Mrs. Smith? What if she does it at home, blah, blah, blah. But they appreciated that we kind of held to our professional philosophy of, no, you can't do hair color at home, even if I hand you the bottle. So that was just work for us, you know, just my personal.
I'm so glad you said that, because we call ourselves professional, and we are. But when you look at the other professions, the doctors didn't have the people drive by and then give them a needle and tell them to go get themselves a shot. You know, there's some things that we just can't allow our clients to do, because it's number one, it's about the formulation. It's about the application. It's not just about that color tube, you know, or the box of color that they can buy. They can't get the same results. And I think that if we believe that, then we have to act accordingly. And, you know, it's not about the money. It's about the integrity of what we believe and how we work and how we feel about our industry. So I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I know a lot of people, and I'm not saying anything negative about the way they did it or how they believe, but I'm just saying that, you know, you have to really look at yourself and want to be able to display to everybody how you feel about your industry.
Yeah, I mean, I was trained years ago by John Gunther, and he always said, well, it's not just the formula, you know, it's the application, and two people doing the same thing is not the same. And we all know application is probably more important than formula, right? Certainly as important. And so I would say to my clients, what, where are you going? I'm walking around. I mean, New York was closed down for a year and a half. We're not going anywhere, but they did appreciate it when we came back. And we did a step up back. When we first opened, we just did color and cuts, no blowouts, because then we thought, you know, at that time they didn't want hair blowing around. It was an airborne virus and all that stuff. So we kind of got an education as we went along on how to handle this, as I'm sure most of us did. My thing is, how do we handle the future? What does it look like? And everyone has changed. Every industry has changed. And, you know, the beauty industry traditionally doesn't change as fast, but we have to now. We're almost like the garment center. You really have to know what's going to happen so we could build to that future. I believe that the, you know, everybody complains about not having enough help or trainees and everything. Well, we know we have to make it exciting, but we have to make it where they can put their hands in the hair pretty quickly. So we have a program, it's called Finish Before You Begin. And we teach people just to blow out before we even put a scissor in their hand, so that they can do blowouts, make some new clients, make some tips, feel like they're doing hair. For color, my own program now in the color department is we teach them, you know, semi-demis, we'll teach them some face frame highlights and single process and glaze. No big correction work, no huge, you know, makeovers. Right. And I could pretty much get them on the floor that way, you know, quickly, depending on each person. But it's worked for us, and everybody seems to be happy, because instead of an assistant and just an assistant's night and all that, you know, it drags out too long, particularly in New York. You know, everybody wants to learn in a New York minute here. I don't know if it's that way around the world, but they have about 30 seconds of your attention, and then they're like, no, I'll go on YouTube and learn this. And we all know that's a nice, all webinars are important, but there's nothing like working on a real, you know, Mrs. Smith, right?
Right. So let me ask you about some different areas in our industry and give me your opinion. Manicuring, how valuable is that in your salon right now? And do you see it changing drastically in the next year?
Yeah, it's already changed dramatically. And I mean, you may be aware, I work with one of the biggest nail manufacturers in the world, Kiss. And they told me last year that forget the manicure industry, it's not going to be profitable for many reasons, but one is the workforce and how they want to be paid. And I don't want to say more than that, but so right now we used to have 10 tables. I just took out 5 of them, and just in my reconfiguration, so I'm putting in 6 colorists with 5 manicure tables were my beginning colorist. So I did it by square foot instead of emotional, you know. Yeah. And it just made that square footage in my space more valuable. I find it, I've been in nail business because traditionally hair color clients are nail clients. They always have been, they're our best clients. But that business, to run it, is really more and more difficult. And 4 years ago, we were doing 750,000 in nails. Last year, I think we did 450,000. So that was my biggest hit. And I don't see myself being able to fix it because I can't hire manicurists. So I took that square footage and rerouted it. We were able to put in six, we call them express service colorists. And so the numbers just are triple. I mean, it's just more exciting all around.
How did you advertise the express color service? Did you do it in salon or did you do it externally? And if so, tell me what media that you went other than maybe social media.
Well, we today you have to do all medias, but in terms of community, we did it in salon and then we launched it within our own community. Well, I'm in a very intense, dense area. I mean, we have thousands of people within a 1 mile radius, but anyway, we did this slogan, which you may or may not like, but it worked for us. It was called hair color, you're not dressed without it. So when people started to dress again out of their pajamas, we wanted them to think about hair color. I'm not dressed without that either. Because as you know, some people decided to go gray during the pandemic, which that's good. And it was kind of a cute slogan, but it got everybody's attention. And then we did a flat fee. So we did like $125, a single process, a glaze and a blowout. And that was all our young colorists did that. And they did the blowouts as well. So it was good training. And it's it created a lot of new people. What I'm finding in New York, people like packages now. They really want to know what something costs.
Right.
You know, they a few years ago, we had the luxury of, whatever, when they came in for a consult, you quoted them at the consult. But now, a new client, and I think the younger people are very savvy in what things cost. And they're very savvy in what color is. So they want to know, I can get a balayage, I can get a trim and a blowout, what's it going to cost me? So we preset the prices on that. And everybody likes the packages. And it worked out well for us because it took them from just the color and it included a blowout, which especially in this heat we're having this summer, people really may not want their hair blown because it's it's hot out, but that it was such a good price that they decided to do it. And so they become cutting customers as well. The other thing we took out after the pandemic, which we always had in, so we had a free blowout bar where we provided blowers, brushes and things for clients if they got color and they wanted to blow their own hair. We didn't have a problem with that. But then after the pandemic, I just took that out. And instead, we put in a $38.50, what we call our express blowout, no appointment.
Oh, that's nice.
It helps them.
So they can drop in?
Yeah. Well, we have because we're in a mall, we do about 102 walk-in people, what we call walk-in people a week. Just no appointments, just for what they decide to have, cuts, blows, color. And I'm really believing that, and I felt this way for the last few years, people are, you're a busy person, very difficult to make an appointment that all of a sudden, if they decide on, Monday morning, gee, I'm free today, I want to run in and get a color or cut or whatever, they want to just come in and have it. So it helps build your people who aren't so busy. And we really encourage that. So I've really worked on all our marketing is geared towards, it's like color at your convenience. And I think the convenience of clients these days, because everybody's schedule has changed between people being home, working home. So I think the flexibility that you mentioned of the staff scheduling is very important, because now the woman working at home, all of a sudden she wants to run in during her lunch break, and you have to have staff there to do it. So these no appointments seem to be getting almost busier than our solid booked appointments. But putting it in and making the clients feel very comfortable with that, I think it increased the business by about 12%.
Well, that's fabulous. So how do you feel about texture? And are you seeing more conversations leaning toward change, not curls, but just retexturing their hair? How do you see that coming? I know, me too.
Yeah, in New York, it's pretty popular. Those, beachy waves. We've been doing so for the month of August. We did them as a special. We did our texture waves. And we also did Caridans for the other side of the coin at a discount the whole month of August to keep everybody busy with those services. We see the hair coming shorter also, Sheila, here in New York. So that's important because, you know, for years, everybody's walking around with this long hair. My mission now is to try to get the staff to cut all their hair.
That's the hardest part.
Yeah, it is. But I see the trend. Women want any age group, even the age group, you know, from 25 to 45, which is where we live, more or less. They're going more for styled, messy looking bobs, you know, tousled, but it's still an obvious trendy haircut. Finally, in New York, we're out of our, pandemic head. And including even makeup. I mean, for the last 2 years, we probably haven't even sold a lipstick, but now that mask and everything else are gone, our skincare is coming back a little in a different way. You know, we do a lot of light therapy and stuff like that now. And people are looking at their hair to be healthier, shinier, but they are putting more color on. And I think quicker color services, well, for me anyway, obviously, that's the most profitable.
Right. Well, what would you advise anybody that is about ready to open a salon? What would you advise them to do before they even think about putting in a salon?
Well, I think they have to understand their finances and understand, can they sustain themselves or their family, whatever the situation is, for 6 months or maybe even a year before it makes money. So I think that's important. I think they have to understand which manufacturer they're going to align with, because I don't think you can be everything to everybody. So right now we're with Goldwell. They're very good to us. I was with another manufacturer previously for many years, because these manufacturers will help a young owner be successful. And then you have to really analyze your time. You know, as you know, to me, a business is 24/7. It doesn't end. And you have to have that dedication to it. It's you have to have a passion for it, but you also have to have the knowledge of business. And so you have to have your business hat on, your lease, your location. All these things have to come first, your finances. I was very lucky. I went into business so young that I didn't know I needed all that. But, you know, I was lucky enough to kind of build it. But that's not today. Today, everything changes in a nanosecond. You know, so you have to have financial behind you. You have to have a goal of what is it you really want to do? Is it, if you're more important that you're this great hairdresser, maybe business isn't for you. Maybe you are better off working for someone, you know. But if the business side of the industry is what you like, then you better put your business hat on and put your creative hat a little behind you.
Well, I love talking to you, and you know, I absolutely admire you so much, and you've done so much for Intercoiffure as well as within the industry as well. So I think we have to have another probably podcast. Let's give it about 3 months and let's just sort of then see where we are. Because I think our industry is really ready to make a huge change. It's going to turn around. I think it's already turned around financially, but I think that there's going to be some major changes within our organization as well as global industry. What do you think?
I think so too. Listen, I think the beauty industry is so ripe. I think we're going to take off like a rocket ship at warp speed. I just think we're in this little lull. Everybody's restructuring. And those of us who love the industry and have knowledge in it, hopefully we'll bring along the new people wanting to go into the industry. Again, I can't stress enough, you know, joining Intercoiffure, being a global organization, being able to speak to other people. You have to have mentors along your life. I always believe that. And you have to join other organizations. If you're going to be successful, you know, we have to be with other successful people. Intercoiffure's mission has always been to take the next generation forward. And I look forward to Intercoiffure. Congratulations, Sheila, on the job you're doing. I think the World Organization, with its new president, has a bright future. And if anybody has never been to Paris or Mondial or the World Organization, I would encourage them to go. And hopefully we'll see you there soon.
Thank you for joining us for the ICA Podcast 9 podcast. Be sure to tune in next week for more industry insight and information. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast too and share it with your friends in the industry. Our only goal is to bring people together and share information with those that need it. Intercoiffure America Canada is proud to be the voice for salon owners. For more information about us, visit intercoiffure.com. That's intercoiffure.com.